monologue.
A Mill Creek coffee shop owner is saying people are being mean to her staff when they walk in and realize that she has put in place, voluntarily she has put in place, a vaccine passport system. You show up, you have to show proof of vaccination, and if you don't, you will be denied service. People in Mill Creek don't like that. This is not Seattle, this is Mill Creek. They have some semblance of respect for privacy. And they apparently have been mean to her workers. So as Ryan Sims of Caro 7 TV says, enough is enough.
Requiring proof of vaccination for dine-in.
The result, people launching into tirades at both Savannah and her employees. This weekend, she took to Instagram with a plea for civility.
I am tired of watching customers come in and yell and scream and treat my employees like they aren't humans.
Why don't you cry about... Oh, never mind. I guess she was crying about it. So, obviously, you should not be yelling at employees. Something tells me, however, that this is not merely someone just shouting. Something tells me this is her realization that her policy is unpopular and people are simply saying it. When you spring this on people at a coffee shop, this is Mixed Coffee in Mill Creek. If you're going to spring this on people, well, I don't think it's appropriate for someone to yell at you. You have to have some level of acceptance that they're going to be caught off guard. And again, Mill Creek is not Seattle. Did you not expect any pushback? Like, not even a little bit of pushback? You don't have to put this system in place. You are making that choice. And customers are making the choice to tell you that they don't like what it is you're doing, and they leave. I've been pretty consistent on this. I don't think you should just yell at the barista who has no say in these policies. If you go into a Whole Foods and they start to check for your vaccine passport or Trader Joe's or something, the individual staff member who's getting paid minimum wage had no say whatsoever in that decision. So it is wholly inappropriate to start to express your anger at them. However, I understand why that is sort of the inclination by people. It is kind of natural. You go after the messenger. You're shocked when it happens to you. You're not expecting it. You're angry. We have all called a customer service line because we have somehow been aggrieved, and we end up taking it out on the person who picked up the phone. Now, sometimes they deserve it because they're not being particularly helpful. But many times, I've certainly caught myself doing this after I get very nasty or mean or snarky. I'll say, look, I know it's not your fault. I don't mean to get upset at you. You didn't do this. And then, of course, I don't change my behavior whatsoever, and I continue to yell at the person. But we've all kind of done it. And I'm wondering if that's really what's going on here. Now, what, of course, this business owner should do is say, wow, it turns out that my customer base doesn't like being called out as unvaccinated, or they don't like being called out as irresponsible. They don't like it that I don't trust them enough to think that they'll make the right decision. Because there are a lot of people like me who is vaccinated, and I recommend vaccinations for most people. But I'm not going to show my vaccine passport unless I'm in a position where I absolutely have to. There's no way around it. All of my options of going out, going shopping, whatever it happens to be, and if I'm put in that position, I will eventually have to give in. But if you're doing it voluntarily and there is a coffee shop down the street that isn't doing it, I'm going to go there and I'm not going to go to your shop, period. End of story. I am making that choice as a consumer, the same way you are making that choice as a business owner. Now, I'm not going to be rude about it, but I'm willing to bet part of you understood that that kind of was going to happen to you.
The interview.
Over at Geiger Elementary School in Tacoma, students were told that they would have to wear a mask in between bites, or I guess during the mastication session during lunch. Pull the mask down, take a bite of your lunch, put the mask back up, chew and swallow. Of course, that is not based in science nor data. One parent raised a stink and has been ignored, but not by us. Joining me on the line is Michael. Michael, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jason.
So you have a kid at Geiger. You got an email about the ridiculous rules. Take over. What happened next?
Yeah, so I emailed back the principal and just simply asked for an explanation as to why that policy was being put in place. I understand there's all sorts of conflicting guidance out there these days, so I just was hoping for some sort of explanation, whether that be from the school or from the health experts there. And, you know, really, Jason, the bigger problem I had was that was used referring to lunch as a dangerous time for all. I have a problem with kind of the language that is being used in this situation, especially if that's getting to our kids as well.
Exactly. And I think that the hysteria around some of these rules is what's most problematic. I mean, he writes, Principal O'Brien is his name. Neil O'Brien writes in this email that you got, in addition to, you know, putting the mask on while you're chewing and swallowing, it says, our cafeteria has a fantastic airflow system and children are spaced apart. And when over 100 of them are in one large room, we need to treat lunchtime as a dangerous time for all. That is not a dangerous time for all. How do you brag about the airflow and the mitigation policies as far as social distancing and then say it's dangerous for everyone?
Right. And it was interesting when I saw that you published the story yesterday on My Northwest. You included in there that you had heard back from the principal and the district, which, you know, I will say in the initial aftermath of me sending the email and kind of getting a response, I was contacted by a district representative. He's very, very professional, very, you know, it was handled very well, but then there was nothing. And so I was shocked to read that you obviously were able to get a response, but I'm still kind of waiting for the school to engage with me. I've left voicemails. I've sent a few emails like, hey, I'm just looking for an explanation still. And Jason, I'm a reasonable guy. I'm very respectful. I'm not trying to stir things up for the sake of stirring them up. I legitimately just want an explanation.
Well, you got a little bit of an explanation, just not directly from the principal who has not responded to you. You did get an email from Shalay Hobbs. She's Tacoma Public Schools Administrator of Health Services, and she included a whole bunch of links to the documents that supposedly back the policy of putting on a mask while chewing and swallowing lunch, except, as you noted, as I note in my piece online right now, I went to all the guidance that she linked to. Not a single bit of attention is paid specifically to what she claims. None of what she claims is in the guidance is actually there.
Correct. I scoured it as well, couldn't find it. And I addressed that in an email. I said, hey, I appreciate providing this. I could not find anything in these documents that references that policy. In addition, I could not find anything whatsoever resembling that lunchtime should be treated as dangerous. And so that's really where kind of I have the issue is, hey, you know what? We all say things that sometimes we're like, you know what? I probably shouldn't have said it that way. You're mm-hmm. right. Let me address that. And so I was kind of hoping and somewhat expecting that would be corrected. And when the email, now the principal sends out weekly emails to update, you know, here's what's going on at the school. There was absolutely zero mention of the previous policy and correcting that, nor was there any mention about anything regarding the language that was used. So I was a little surprised and disappointed, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out whether or not this policy exists. Now, the district says it is no longer in play. It was only at Geiger. They misread the data, basically, or the guidance, and they were a little bit overzealous. But I asked whether or not there's going to be a statement made to the parents, and I got no response. I mean, clearly they're trying to ignore this story. I'm glad you brought attention to it. I think it's absolutely absurd. For those of you who want to actually read portions of these emails and look at the actual guidance and just help spread the word on this, because I imagine there are some equally ridiculous policies in place at schools all across Washington State. And if you want to send me a note about them, please do. But text the keyword RANTZ, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my story. Of course, you can go directly to ktth.com. Michael, thank you so much for stopping by and telling us the story. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Jason. Appreciate you shining a light on this.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Monologue.
Not looking good for President Joe Biden. A new morning consult poll is out, and his approval ratings decreasing sharply
with black voters. This comes after his speech about forced vaccines. Now, remember, we're told that voter ID is racist, but vaccine passports that come after mandatory vaccines, not racist at all. He's doing it for you. When we talk about who is disproportionately impacted by the vaccine mandate, it's not just merely the unvaccinated, right? Who are the majority unvaccinated as a percentage of a demographic? It's black and Latinos. That demographic has a high number of unvaccinated individuals than whites or Asians. And so if you're telling them you need to be vaccinated, you're not doing the right thing, you're too stupid to do the right thing, we have to force it, they might take it personally. Now, anyone who's unvaccinated who is being forced into this is, of course, going to take it personally. Everyone is making their own minds up here. And sometimes they have very, very legitimate reasons not to want to get vaccinated. Other times, not so legitimate. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's supposed to be your choice. And as a result of this, Biden's approval rating decreased 12 points amongst black voters. 12 points. That is insane. And when you look specifically at unvaccinated black voters, the number goes down to 17 percentage points. He went down. 17. His overall approval on handling just COVID decreased by 9 points since the end of August. That is a lot of people. And it's not just the black vote that's causing him problems now. If you look just overall, he's at, according to a Gallup poll, the lowest number for approval that he's ever had. Right now, the number of Americans who said they approved of the job performance went from 49% to 43%. 53% say they disapproved. That gives him a 10-point negative gap between approval and disapproval. That's not good. And it's not all just having to do with COVID. Anyone looking at what's going on at the border, anyone who paid even a little bit of attention to what happened in Afghanistan and is continuing to happen in Afghanistan, anyone who watches any speech or any press conference where he ends by saying, "I'm not supposed to take any questions," and then just walks away. Anyone who sees that will question whether or not this president is capable of leading this country. Do you get a sense that this president has control over anything right now? Do you seriously get a sense of that? You can say what you will about Donald Trump. Everyone was like, "Oh, Trump had no control." I never felt as if he had no clue what was going on. With President Biden, that's all I feel.
The interview.
We don't usually get judges speaking out so passionately on issues. They like to keep a lot of this close to the vest. But sometimes on issues of such huge importance, it's important for them to speak out. And that's exactly what Judge Dave Larson, a municipal court judge out in Federal Way, is doing in a forthcoming editorial in the Seattle Times, tackling the issue of employees being vaccinated by November 1st if they work for the Supreme Court. And he's doing it in a big way for a big reason. Joining me on the line is Judge Dave Larson. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, we've had different conversations about different court systems. In Snohomish County, for example, people who work for the court have to be vaccinated. Obviously, statewide, state employees have to, but a lot of people kind of missed a Supreme Court issue. Take us through what the issue is and why you're now speaking out.
Well, I obviously had to remain silent during all of the other issues. It had nothing to do with my court or the courts. And when the Supreme Court on August 18th mandated vaccines for state court employees and then encouraged us local judges to adopt the same, I felt I had a duty to push back and send an email to the Supreme Court telling them that that I believed it was illegal, laid out the reasons. That email ultimately got sent to somebody who put it on Facebook, and it went viral and kind of grew some legs. And so I feel like I have a duty to step out and inform the public that that there's some issues so the debate can begin.
Did you get a response from the letter that you sent the justices?
No.
Did you expect one?
I would hope I would have one, because it's an important issue, but they may be considering it. Keep in mind that the original order was only signed by the Chief Justice, so we don't know. I have no idea whether if there was a vote, if what they discussed behind closed doors or anything. So I don't know if they're considering the issue or not, but it's an important enough issue for everybody that I feel like, since it's gone public, I feel like I need to follow through and stand up for representative government, which is really what it comes down to.
You call it an existential issue.
Oh, exactly. Because the way it works is civics 101. You know, you have the legislature creates laws, the governor carries out laws, and the courts interpret laws. And that's the way it is. And what I pointed out in my memo is that in the email, as well as the attachments, is that I believe that we've gone beyond the scope of the law, and we are now specifically legislating from the bench. We have no power to do this in the sense of regulating health. And so I felt it was important enough to stand up, because longstanding case law supports the notion that only the legislature can create vaccine mandates in Washington State.
But what was alarming to me in reading your memo is that you have lawsuits right now that will get in front of the Supreme Court on the very issue as to whether or not the governor can do this on his own or using the emergency powers, or eventually, you know, whether or not Snohomish County can do it or King County can do it. But the court itself is saying that they can do it. So why would any sort of plaintiff think that they're going to get a fair hearing in front of these justices?
Well, and that's exactly the issue here. That's why we needed to stay in our lane. The court got out of its lane and started basically regulating, and then all of a sudden it made itself a participant. And there's specific rules when we speak out or do things that kind of prejudge issues about what you have to do, and you can't hear the case. And it's basically the same as you think the light's green, I think it's red, we got in an accident, and we go to court. But before we go to court, the judge writes an article or does something publicly to say he believes the light's red before we ever get to court. How are you going to feel when you get to court trying to argue the light's green?
Where do you think this ends?
I hope it ends in a way that we can restore really the way that we're supposed to govern ourselves. Most of the turmoil, most of the problems we're facing, all the protests, all the dissension, and even some of the resistance to the vaccine itself are caused by the fact that we've departed from the brilliance of our system. The legislative process, even though some would argue it's not effectively working now, at least there's a way. It's like in Washington State, we have 147 representatives, 49 in the Senate and 98 in the House. And it's like a jury of 147 people. You go litigate the issues, try the issues. They come out with a law that's reasonable. Everybody had a chance to be heard, and social stability results most of the time. But if you have a dictation where people feel like they haven't been heard, the natural inclination, it's been this way thousands of years, the natural inclination is to fight back, push back, and you have an unstable, tumultuous society. And what we're seeing right now is the byproduct of not really following some fundamental rules about how we govern ourselves.
Well, I hope there's some bit of logic and reason that prevails in all of this. I don't have much hope, at least not right now. But after reading your memo, it sure makes a really clear case. It will be in the Seattle Times. Hopefully people will check it out. We've been talking with Judge Dave Larson. Thank you so much for coming on, Judge. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now this.
The Jason Rants Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rants.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rants, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The same pattern at Washington state agencies continue, this time at the Department of Social and Health Services, DSHS, where individuals who are seeking a religious accommodation to get out of the governor's vaccine mandate, they are being told, yes, we believe that you have a significant and sincere religious exemption request. However, we're not actually going to accommodate you. We're talking next to an employee directly impacted. She finds herself in that same position. She asked that we not use her name for some anonymity, and she joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So if you could, take us through why, first, you asked for a religious accommodation and what the response was. How'd you get it?
Well, I had to fill out a couple of different forms. One was pretty basic, two questions. You know, if I have any religious conviction that prevents me from taking the vaccine, and if I've ever received any vaccine or medication from a healthcare provider as an adult. And then I had to fill out an additional form with like some essay style questions, specifically about how the vaccine conflicts with my religious beliefs, how long I've held those religious beliefs. And if I don't object to other vaccines, but I do object to the COVID, explain why it's different.
So basically you had to prove that you held a religious conviction. Did you feel that was appropriate?
No, I felt it was extremely intrusive. I mean, I'm having to explain my religion to my employer, which I thought was like a hands-off conversation at work anyways.
Well, it used to be, but not anymore. Not when it comes to the COVID vaccine. What is your religious objection?
I just don't believe in taking man-made medication in general. I feel like your body is pretty strong and capable of fighting off quite a lot, and if you allow it to, and the more that you allow it, the more you expose it to, the stronger it is. So I just don't take a lot of medication in general.
But is that a religious perspective, or is that just a philosophical one?
It's slightly more philosophical, but it does lean a little toward the pagan religions.
Okay, so do you identify then as pagan?
I have historically.
Because normally we don't hear folks who are pagan or really anything outside of just sort of the general Christian identity saying, I don't want to take this because of the connection to the aborted fetus line of cells that are used in this. So you're saying it's actually not having anything to do with that. It's pretty significantly different, but still a religious belief.
Yes.
So it's funny because you take the position of, you know, you generally try not to take any medication. I think most reasonable people don't want to take medication. But this question that says, have you ever taken medication? Most people look at that and say, well, that is not connected at all to religion, unless you're talking about, you know, a Christian Scientist, for example. So from your religious perspective, what is the, mostly because now I'm curious, what is the situation as it relates to, you know, man-made medication? When do you take it?
When all my other options haven't failed, I rely mostly on herbal remedies, more natural, holistic paths. But I will, you know, if I have an extreme fever that's not reducing in a natural way, I'll take a Tylenol. Same thing if I have extreme swelling from an injury that, you know, ice and elevation isn't working on, I might take an ibuprofen to relieve that.
Yeah.
But I don't take any kind of pain medications. I don't seek out, you know, regular long-term issues. You know, I've gone through traumas in my life where I felt the need for mental health treatment, but I look at it more of a holistic vitamin D and therapy kind of, rather than medication, you know, that kind of stuff.
So what do you do for the Department of Social and Health Services that they deemed you could not do in a way that would accommodate this particular belief of yours?
Well, that's something that I find the most interesting because I'm not given a lot of information about that. I actually started working for DSHS back in April of 2020. And in my current position within DDA back in August of 2020. So I've always done this position remotely. Now there is a component that when we're out of an emergency, situation that we can return to working in family homes. But the stance, as my understanding, is that we won't be returning to working into family homes until we're out of this emergency situation.
Interesting.
So why they can't accommodate me, I don't know.
Well, and obviously they've been accommodating you this entire time without even realizing it, perhaps. But what do you actually do? What would you do inside of a home?
I work with children and families to get them connected to appropriate services, both in the community and potential funding access within DDA.
So this is incredibly important work. You're connecting people who are in rather tough situations with the resources that they actually need.
Yes.
And you've been doing this remotely this entire time?
Yes.
And when you ask any follow-up questions as to why they suddenly can't accommodate you, do you get any answers?
I have not yet.
Do you think you're going to?
Unfortunately, I do not.
Yeah. Do you think there is even an answer that exists that is based in logic and reason? Or do you think maybe this has to do with just forcing you to get the vaccine that you don't want to get?
Honestly, I think it's mostly about forcing me to get the vaccine I don't want to get.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the state is doing this?
I'm really not sure what the motivation behind doing it, but it's clearly more about compliance than safety. If this was rooted in safety, I feel like we would have actual conversations about how to maintain safety, how to, you know, wash your hands properly, how to properly care for a mask, how to engage and interact socially while still maintaining distance, or, you know, the difference between and or, because the CDC guidelines are an or situation. You wear a mask or 6 feet distance.
Yeah.
And so, I just feel like education would really be the key rather than this narrative of just get the vaccine.
So what ultimately are you going to do? They've said no to your religious accommodation request. It is already past the deadline to get the vaccine for Pfizer or Moderna, unless you were to use your personal time off that you've accrued as part of the deal that the union has made. What are you going to do? Are you going to take termination, or are you thinking you're going to take the vaccine?
Well, I'm not going to take the vaccine.
So will you resign, or are you basically going to force their hand and have them fire you?
I think I'm going to end up resigning, just because I think it's going to help me out in the long run, because I got to think of myself.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I do wonder, though, do you think that ultimately when it's all at the end of the day, about 20-30% of the staff said they didn't want to get the vaccine. It turns out the folks who put in the religious accommodation requests, and this is just religious accommodation requests, about 7-8%. If at the end of the day that 7-8% doesn't change, do you think that the governor will go through and just fire you all?
Unfortunately, I do think it's going to come down to that unless some serious legal action isn't taken between now and then.
Are you thinking about legal action?
I wish I could. I mean, I have. My husband and I have discussed it, but getting somebody to call you back is pretty hard.
No, I bet. And unfortunately, it seems like at least out here, judges have been siding with the governor and this seemingly limitless powers that he is granted by the legislature under a COVID emergency or any sort of public health emergency. Last question for you. Obviously, you don't want to lose your job. I'm presuming you actually enjoy what it is you do. Losing this job, what does that actually mean for you and your family?
I guess we're going to see. It definitely means tighten things up.
But I mean, is it going to be one of those issues where you're going to be really struggling, or do you have at least a little bit of room to be unemployed, at least temporarily?
We have a little bit of room, but, you know, we're an average middle-class family. So, you know, our savings is only going to go so far.
What do you want the governor to know about this?
That this is completely unjust. Forcing people to do what you want them to do is not the way to get it done. And continually removing the metrics of what we need to reach makes this unattainable.
Yeah.
Where is it going to actually end?
Well, we obviously, like we've been telling everybody who comes on sharing these stories, we wish you the best of luck. You're in a pretty crummy situation. It's not a just situation. It's frankly ludicrous that they would force you into getting something that you just don't want to get, regardless of whether or not it's philosophical or religious, frankly. you're someone who is already working remotely with the Department of Social and Health Services, and to be told all of a sudden, well, we can't safely do it. We know what this is really about. So we wish you the best of luck, and make sure you keep us in the loop if, you know, they actually do something surprising and get back to you and explain their logic. We would love to highlight that.
Thank you. I'll definitely keep you in the loop.
Perfect. We appreciate that. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
TV's dumbest lawyer, God bless her heart, Sunny Hostin, got into it with some folks at The View, Joy Behar being among the main sort of opponents on this very topic. She got into it over the topic of whether or not Monica Lewinsky is a victim of Bill Clinton. Now, it wasn't just Joy Behar that got involved. Actually, Sarah Hines, or Haynes, I guess, made some interesting points there. We'll focus a little bit more on her, I guess, mostly to save everyone's ears from Joy Behar. But the reason why they're talking about this is American Crime Story is out with its new season. And past seasons, you know, the OJ, I think, was probably the biggest one. I think there was one other, but they're focused on the Monica Lewinsky scandal, in which, as an intern, Monica Lewinsky had a sexual relationship with then-President Bill Clinton. We all know some of the issues around it. It sort of focused on more from Bill Clinton's perspective, the idea that he would just lie under oath. He committed perjury and arguably, you know, more importantly, from a non-legal standpoint, he lied to the American people. He said over and over again he never had sex with Monica Lewinsky. He then tried to parse it out and say, well, it's technically not sex because of the specific act that we were engaged in. And what I always found kind of curious was feminists, especially up until that point, but feminists would say that sexual assault and rape is about power. Now, I don't always believe that. But that's what the feminists said, that no matter what, if you were in a position of power, like, say, I don't know, being the president of the United States of America, which makes you the most powerful person in the world, and you, in that position, have a sexual relationship with someone who doesn't really have power, let's say, just to pick at random, an intern who's working in the Oval Office, that that would be considered a sexual assault. Now, again, I don't necessarily believe that, but that's what feminists said. And there's certainly power dynamics at play, 100%. And that could, in fact, be the reason why someone has a sexual relationship with someone. But feminists believe that up until it hit Bill Clinton. And then all of a sudden, because they liked Bill Clinton, they liked what he stood for, they liked his policy prescriptions on issues that mattered to them, and because they didn't want to side with Republicans going after Bill Clinton, because they were just as partisan then as they are now, slightly more now, seems, I think, a little bit worse because of the amplification on social media, they sort of changed their minds. And so weirdly, Sunny Hostin on The View today had this to say about Monica Lewinsky. And it was one of those comments where you kind of did a double take, like, wait, what'd you just say?
Now she is a producer of movies based on this affair. Her life, she's made, I think her net worth is in the millions of dollars. She's part of the 1%.
Oh my gosh, so that clearly means she's not really a victim. She's part of the 1%. Let's talk about Tina Turner for a moment. Was Tina Turner a victim? I would say so. She was viciously beaten and abused. Is she a victim? Yes. Isn't she also a 1%er now? Didn't they make a movie about her? Didn't she write a book about it? Didn't she continue to sell a whole bunch of albums? Didn't her brand as a musician increase after all that? Because by Sunny Hostin's view of things, she's not a victim. Tina Turner isn't a victim. What person would actually say that or think that? Monica Lewinsky is a victim who then also profited in this sense from this show off of her victimhood. It doesn't make her less of a victim. It makes her someone who ended up profiting off of it. And again, and when people say that, even when I say that, it almost sounds like I'm dissing Monica Lewinsky for profiting off of it. I'm not. I mean it in the literal sense. But she is 100% a victim. Sarah Haynes responded.
That in the Me Too movement is saying you deserve to be heard. Let us hear your story because someone else didn't. She didn't get to tell hers openly and say in that day and age she was fat shamed,
a movie,
she was slut shamed,
and now she's producing another movie.
Yeah, but like, thank God she told a scene that was mortifying. That if you had to, if you're going to make a movie and make it about you, you make it comfortable and cut things out. She insisted on this one scene that was so probably triggering.
You talk about the actual assault part from her perspective, and that Sunny Hostin would defend the idea that she's not a victim, and really Bill Clinton's the victim in all of this, as was part of the conversation. It's just weird to me, and it's a sincere betrayal of the feminist attitudes that these feminists, so-called, used to have. But beyond that, it's a weird loyalty to Bill Clinton, who's not deserving of it. First of all, I don't think any politician is deserving of the loyalty that some people give them, that most people might give them. And that Bill Clinton, in this era of Me Too, garners this kind of support from someone like Sonny Hostin, whether direct or indirect, is just, it's weird and it's unnecessary. He doesn't need Sonny Hostin to support him. And by the way, neither does Monica Lewinsky. She doesn't need Sonny Hostin to support her. But it's just kind of weird how some folks decide, for whatever reason, and all reasons can be different from time to time, just decide to push aside their values, their principles, and instead side with someone based just on blind loyalty. It is a bizarre move from some, especially Sunny Hostin, because she's such an ideologue. You would think that she would just side with the ideological principles behind the underlying beliefs that she has rather than the actual ideologue that she supports. So it is kind of weird. I am actually kind of curious from your perspective what you guys think. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Again, that's 1-800-465-8770.
The Last Rants.
Not that I'm going to make any big case here, but you know, we're told over and over and over again that Florida, Texas, Arizona, some other red states are just the worst when it comes to COVID. And yet I've been to all three and I find them to be the most reasonable when it comes to COVID. If anyone was going to get COVID from those three states, it would be me. And I visited all three. And each time I went to hang out with the very demographic that I'm told is responsible for the rise in cases, which are Republicans who don't want to get vaccinated. Now, obviously, I don't know the vaccination rate of any of the events that I went to, but I went to the Student Action Summit from Turning Point USA in Florida. I went to CPAC, the conference, again, for conservatives, in Dallas. And then I went in Phoenix to Turning Point USA, their headquarters, for some videos. If anyone was going to get COVID on top of all that, from the travel, but going to these so-called hotspots, probably would be me. Does this mean that the vaccine works? Maybe. Does it mean that the media is overhyping the threats that those states pose? Probably. Just kind of curious, and it's sort of just running in my head. Thank you guys so much for tuning in later tonight. In fact, about an hour from now, I'll be the MC of the Washington State Republican Party annual dinner. I'm looking forward to that. Hope to see some of you there in just about an hour. And I'll see you tomorrow. That's been The Last Rants.